every super at McDonald's, but from what it seems, the bun, the kind of shrunk, wrinkly, crinkly, soggy, you know, folded over bun that you get when you buy something at a Jewish restaurant, but some it's not so different at McDonald's. So that doesn't resemble, living or dead, the hamburger bun that you see on television. The answer is because it's not a real bun on television. So that is another type of advertising. And then the third type of advertising has to do with this general, and this is really highlighted in the Super Bowl advertisements, this general trend for advertising not just a product, but an environment, which has nothing really to do with the product. When you see the guy, you know, sleepwalking, buying to get his Coca-Cola, it doesn't really mean anything about, it doesn't tell you much about Coca-Cola, except for the fact that the guy likes Coca-Cola, and we're pretending like he's sleepwalking to get his Coke. Do you really think he's sleepwalking? Probably not, although maybe that's a falsification as well. Is that appropriate? Is that inappropriate? How do we view this whole issue of advertisements and mass media? So this is something, it's a very complex, it's something which is...
Image. Problems are image.
Yes. What do they say in Sprite? They used to say, image is nothing, thirst is everything. I forget exactly what they said. That was a commercial for Sprite for a while. Or obey your thirst. I don't remember. Whatever. The point being is that Allah has a lot to say about advertising. There's a lot written about it. So I actually, tonight, in the back of your packets, I gave you a bibliography. The last page. Just turn the packet to the back side. One is from this book, which we mentioned last week, Rabbi Levine, the professor of economics and the rabbi from YU. In this book called Case Studies in Jewish Business Ethics, has a whole section on advertising. He has an article in the Journal of Contemporary Halacha, of Halacha and Contemporary Society, the RJJ Journal in 1981. He also he has two other books which are important for business ethics, which we mentioned, but not on this particular point. And this article in the Tchumen volume, the third volume of Tchumen, which is an essay by Dr. Itamar Warhaftig. It's a volume, the series is dedicated to interaction between modern society and halacha. So these are some of the sources that you could do for further reading on this topic and many other topics related to advertising. So the underlying and underpinning issue in terms of advertising that would limit the scope and the nature of the types of advertisements that would be permitted according to halacha all stems from one source in the Gemara in Chulin Daf Tzadi Dalet Amud Aleph. So there is no pasuk that discusses advertising. In fact, you're probably familiar with that. You will not find a pasuk in the Torah that speaks about Doritos commercials, about a talking dog, or about a house made out of Bud Light cans. You just don't find that in the Torah HaKadosha. We don't find that. You probably won't find that in too many places either. The dog talking, and the guy inside a casket watching the funeral. See, faking the funeral so he can watch the game and eat his Doritos, whatever. It's, you know, these things don't appear actually in the Torah Kedosha, but the Gemara, thank God, makes an allusion. And that is the statement of Shmuel. Shmuel says here on Chulin 94a, Asur lignov das habrios. You may not deceive. Lignov das means to literally steal their mind. You may not deceive anybody. Va'afilu da'ato shalovi kochavim. Even someone who's an idol worshiper, one may not deceive them. The Gemara explains some of the implications of this. Take a look down where I put the little arrow. Reb Meir says, "Al yistrive adam lachaveru lisod etzlo v'yodea bo she'eno soed." Don't invite your friend to eat with you, knowing in advance that he will not join you. Why? Because that's Gnevas Das. You're setting a false impression. You're deceiving the person. Let's say, you know, the Gellers live in Skokie. Let's say, for some reason, my wife said, we must invite the Gellers over. And I'm like, no way. I'm not inviting the Gellers over. There's no way I'm inviting the Gellers. So we say, but you have to invite them over. So I had a great idea. I found out that the Gellers are going out of town next Shabbos. So what do? That's true. So I call up Steve, and I say on Monday evening, I say, Steve, Nechama and I would love to have you over for Shabbos lunch. And you say, well, I'm going out of town. Which, in fact, you are. I say, oh, you know what? I am so sorry to hear that. We would have really loved to have you over. All right, you know, maybe another time. I hang up the phone. I'm like, you see? Now we don't have to have them over anymore. Says the Gemara, that is an Isser. That is an Isser of Genevas Das because I gave him a false impression. I deliberately deceived him into thinking I wanted to be nice to him, but it was not true. The same thing is, you know, you're a gabbai in a shul, and you have two guys you need to give aliyahs to, and you know that one of them is a kohen. But you want to make him feel good. So you pretend like you don't know who he is. You go over to him, oh, would you like shlishi? He says, no, I'm a kohen. You say, oh, I'm sorry, maybe another time. He says, oh, thank you very much. Thank you so much. That's an isser! Because you're giving him a misimpression. That is an isser, says the Gemara of Genevas Das. You see, ad hechen genevas das, it's not just that I'm not allowed to mislead you into purchasing something that you wouldn't ordinarily purchase or doing something you don't want to do. I'm not even, according to the Gemara, allowed to mislead you into understanding a false gesture of goodwill. That's how far misinterpretation and misimpression is carried by the Gemara. The Gemara says, weiter.
Enough of Gemara, then you can't really be PC when you're dealing with somebody. You have to be straightforward.
That's it. Well, it depends exactly what that means. But yes, you can't be PC in the sense of not giving the correct impression and just, you know, kind of...
beating around the bush.
Yeah, we'll define a little bit more what that means. But you can't, like the Gemara says, you can't open up a barrel in front of someone when... And you make it seem like you're giving them a lavish party when you really are doing it for some other reason. You're just going to use this as an avenue to do it so that it makes the guy think you're honoring him by opening this barrel when you're really just opening the barrel to sell to the guy down the street. You're just doing it in front of him so it makes him feel good. But you're not really intending to open the barrel in his honor at all. These are all misimpressions of goodwill which violate the dictum of Genevas Das. And what does that entail? Look, it's a Gemara. I don't know what kind of Isser that is. Some Rishonim say maybe it's an Isser Rabbana, maybe it's Midvar Sheker Tirchuk, but look on the next page. The Ritva, Rabbi Yomtov from Seville, Rabbi Yomtov al-Sevili, he says, the Isser of Genevas Das, the Isser Genevas Daito shel Eino Yehudi, a non-Jew is included. If you deceive the non-Jew, says Tzasma, Rav Seinu B'Shem Baalei HaTosfos. The Ritva is living in the 14th century in Seville, citing the earlier Baalei HaTosfos, 150 years earlier, from France, who say, Zal, that watch you, Isser Torah. It's an Isser to Oraisa, to mislead somebody. How do you know that? Denafgalanbi, Dirsiv, Lo Signovu, Velo Sechachashu. Don't steal and don't lie. So part of that issue of not stealing is not misleading someone. If I tell you, this is a magnificent book, it's brand new, absolutely brand new, never been read before. And in fact, it's really a used book. That's an issue to Oraisa. If I tell you that by using this tissue, you will not sneeze for the rest of the night, and it's not true. That is an Isser of Genevas Das. So this puts a very serious crimp in the way that we advertise. Says the Rambam, he codifies this Isser d'Oraisa, interestingly, in two different places. And we'll think about why. The first Rambam is in Perek Yud Ches of Hilchos Mechira. Asur l'ramos es b'nei adam b'mekach u'memkar. It's forbidden to fool a purchaser in dealings. Oligno v'staitam. Or to deceive them. And Echad Goyim v'Echad Yisrael. Whether they're Jewish or not, this is one of the laws of sale. You cannot deceive people. You cannot market something in a fraudulent manner. And then the Rambam says on page 4.
Is there a specific reason that we don't have a recall against the Rambam? Make a specific point of saying there's no difference between Jews and non-Jews.
Yeah, so the Beforshim and the Ritva say... Because the point is, it's not just Dark Ishal. This is a bona fide Issa D'Oraisa, according to Ritva, for non-Jews, because the Pasuk later on says, Lo Sechachashu Ish Ba'amiso. So the literal translation of the Pasuk, Ish Ba'amiso, a man and his fellow, is referring to a fellow Jew. Comes the Ritva and says, not limited to just a Jew. The end of the Pasuk is talking about a Jew. But that Pasuk of Lo Signovu, as it relates to Genevas Das, is referring even to Goyim. That's the Chiddush. Don't be misled by the Pshuto Shel Mikra, which is referring specifically to Jews. Even non-Jews are included in this particular aspect. I think it's a good deal.
Do the Rishonim make a distinction as to whether the, quotes, recipient of the message knew or should have known that what was being
told? We'll get
to
that. We'll get to that. So far, we're just establishing the basics. Then we're gonna put some caps on this. But right now, we're establishing, number one, that it's an Issur D'oraisa, according to the Ritva. Number two, that the Rambam quotes in Hilchos Mechira. Number three, look at page four, the Rambam quotes it also in Hilchos Deos. Hilchos Deos are the ethical directives of the Rambam. And the Rambam says in the beginning of Halacha Vav, you can't act in a smooth-talking fashion that misleads and deceives people. And then he quotes our Gemara, where the arrow is. I put it on the page. Don't give him many offerings, and you know that he won't be able to accept it. Don't mislead him in these ways that you're opening the barrel. All these things says the Rambam is an Isser. So I take away from this Rambam now an even expansion of this din. There are two aspects here, that what we would call brisker terminology, tzvei dinim, two dinim here. What is it? One is a legal issue, Hilchos Mechira. You're not allowed from a legal standpoint to steal someone's mind. You're not allowed to deceive them. But it's also a moral issue. It's a moral and ethical imperative not to be gonev das. And that's maybe why the Rambam writes it twice. Because the Rambam usually writes things once. He's very succinct, he's very concise, and he's very careful where he writes them. But for the Rambam, it wasn't enough. It wasn't enough just to put it in Hilchos Deos. You might think it's just an ethical directive. No, it's actually a law as part of Choshen Mishpat, but it's not just Choshen Mishpat, it's also Hilchos Deos. It's both. And this is underlying the law in Shulchan Aruch. Now we're already in the 16th century. Rav Yosef Karo says the Shulchan Aruch, which is 40 on page 5. Take a look where I marked it off in Vav. Simin Reish Chav Ches and Choshe Mishpat Sivav. Osir L'Ramos B'nei Adam Emekachom Emkar. You're not allowed to fool people in a sale. Olig Nov Daitim or to deceive them. Gagonim Yesh Mum B'mekcho. You have a defective item which you are selling. Sarach lo deal lalokeach. You gotta inform the buyer. Okay, so now we're already at marketing lamaisa. I have something which is defective. You know what I'm gonna do? I'm gonna market this in a way that I can conceal the defect in the product. Says the Shulchan Aruch Vayter. He tells you all the things about the Isser of Gonev Das. We'll talk about some of the limitations in a second. Go to the next page and test. Ein mefarkasin. You see where I circled it in Sif Test. Therefore, what does it mean? Ein mefarkasin lo adam v'lo behema v'lo kelim kagon litzvoa zakon eved ha'ome limkor kadeshi yiroi kebachur. You can't spruce up the image of items that you're going to sell. If you have a servant, what does it say? You cannot, what does it mean? Litzboa zoh zakon?
To change
younger. What's that?
Make him look younger.
By exactly. By doing what? By dyeing.
Oh!
Dyeing his beard and his hair. Here you have, he's a fine fellow. He's 78 years old. He's 78 years old. I mean, he's not an old man quite yet, but he's growing in his age. He's 78. In terms of, you're in the market for a slave. You're looking at somebody to be picking cotton or something else. You live in the 1700s, and here's a fine slave on the market. Do you want a 78-year-old slave picking your cotton? No, not recommended. He could have all kinds of back problems and all kinds of things. It's grueling work. That's not for a person who's in their 70s. People are in their 70s. Should live to 100. They shouldn't be working so hard, you know, grueling in the cotton fields. Should live till they're 100. They should be retired from cotton picking at 78. So what do? As a seller, you say, look, you dye his beard and his hair. He looks like he's nothing, not a day past 60. Looks like he's a young man, 60 years old.
Turning back the odometer on a used car.
Oh, exactly. So what happens? You now have given the false impression that this man is a young man. So someone's going to come along and buy him to pick cotton where he shouldn't be buying that person. That slave shouldn't be bought to pick cotton. He should be used in someone's house as kind of a welcome You should do light housework. You shouldn't be, this slave shouldn't be used to pick cotton. That's arduous work for somebody who's 40. So the seller is misleading the buyer. Flipping back the odometer. Look at the further examples. Ulahashko says Abahima may subum shemenichim vizokvin sarosel kadeshitrushmeno. Giving him something to drink that's going to make him look more full than it really is. Not only that, skip down three lines. Velitzboa kalim yeshonim. Giving it a paint job. Kadeshi Yuruka Chadoshim. You have a house. The house is falling apart. You know what I say I'm going to do? I'm going to get a paint job. Great idea! I give my house a paint job. No one can see that it's falling down. No one can see the cracks in the foundation. And there you have it! Brand new house! Just built! Says the Shulchan Aruch, that is usur. All of these are advertising techniques which are isurim in isurim d'oraisa.
But, okay. I'm going to put my house up for sale. So far,
can you paint that house?
That's what I'm asking.
So far, what do you say at this point?
At this point, it looks like I can't paint it. But
you cannot paint it. You dare paint that house.
But can I paint it? As long as I say to the people, yes, my house is X amount of years old, and I tell them exactly how old it is.
Okay. Maybe then. As long as you're not concealing anything. You're not concealing cracks in the foundation or anything like that.
Not intentionally.
You want it to look presentable.
Right.
One second.
Yeah. I would, if you're living in the house, you want to have the house painted. You don't want it to look.
Good. So we're talking about, we want to paint it before we sell it.
Right. Well, many people do that.
Oh, so that's, right now I'm asking if that's permitted. Right now I'm saying that's usur.
And is it usur also?
It's usur. Now, the reason, I'm just pointing out, the reason we say it's usur, we do this many times in this year. We always start by saying it's usur in the beginning, so that everyone stays till the end. Because if you leave now, you can't do it. But now we're going to figure out, I was hoping somebody would give us this segue to, wait a second, is it really true that you're not allowed to paint your house before you're going to sell it? Is that really the case?
You can make a good repair.
Well, the answer is it's not always the case. And that's what we'd like to come up with now. I'd like to point out three major categories of mitigating factors in which it is permitted to give something a more positive look than it would if it was advertised negatively. And let's exactly explain what we mean by that. Let's begin with the Gemara on page 6. I want to start on, this is the Gemara there in Chulin, Tzadi Dalet Amud Beis, the second page, the second side of that folio. Go to number 2 where I have the second bracket, please. If you'll join me where I have bracket number 2. We have the following story, and this is going to be a key to introducing us to some of these factors. Ki ha demar zutra berei de Rav Nachman. There's the following story with Rav Zutra, the rabbi Mar Zutra, the son of Rav Nachman, have a ka'ozel misichu lebe mechuza. He was going from one town called Sichra to Be Mechuza, to another town. He was going from Philly to Pittsburgh, whatever. What happened? And lo and behold, Rava and Rav Safra have a ka'asu le Sichra. They were going from Mechuza to Sichra. They're going the other way. So it's like, you know, you're walking down California from Tui, and I'm walking up from Pratt. So what happens? Pagua Hadadi, they met each other. Who Savar Marzutra thought? What did he think? Have a ka'asu la'afehu de ka'asu. They came to greet him. A delegation, a welcome delegation. Bruchim aboim tzadik bolayir. And what happens? Amar lehu, lama lehu l'rabbanu l'troach ba'asu kuli hai. Great rabbis, why did you have to bother yourselves and come out all this way just to greet me? So guess what he says? Amar lehu Rav Safra, anan lo aviyadina dekosimar. We didn't know you were coming. Don't flatter yourself. But he aviyadina, and he says, had we really known, we would have a tarchina and tfei. Hatarchfei have a tarchina. We would have gone even more. We would have gone even further. Had we known you were coming, what do they say in the song?
I would have baked a cake.
Thank you, I would have baked a cake. Okay? So here's Mar Zutra. How does he feel? He's crestfallen, let's be honest. He feels pretty bad. You know, I thought you guys were coming to greet me, but apparently you're not. So says the Gemara, Amalei Rava. Rava, could just imagine, he gives him an elbow before they walk away. He says to Rav Safra, why'd you do that, man? My tamar amalei achi da'achlish kiladate. You made him feel bad. You gave him chalisha sadas. Amalei v'ha'kamatinalei. I'm not allowed to give him a false impression. We are misleading him. He thought that we were coming to greet him, and we weren't. Says the Gemara. Says Rava, no. Ihu hu dekamati nafshe. He fooled himself. Says the Gemara, sometimes the buyer, the recipient, is responsible for the mistake. Ihu dekamati nafshe. He should have realized that we were not coming to greet him. He should have realized that it's very possible we were going for a shpatzir, or we were going out to Mechuz, from Mechuza to Sichra. We were going on our own. So it was his mistake that he came and thought that we were coming to greet him. Ihu dekamati nafshe. He caused the mistake. So this is the opening, this is the aperture to start the argument to say, well, until now we've been suggesting that it's the seller's responsibility for full disclosure at every juncture. Now we're starting to say, wait a second, maybe Rav is correct, which is what we assume lahalacha, and it's not always appropriate to have full disclosure. Maybe sometimes it's okay to say, buyer beware. You should have known better. This is the new argument. Sometimes we assume that you as a consumer should have known better. Let's look at some examples. Take a look on the next page. This Gemara, you know, maybe I'll just for a second go to back to page 5, just so you'll see that the Gemara is actually quoted in the Shulchan Aruch. Just go to back to page 5 for a second. On the bottom, in halfway down Vav, 4 lines from the bottom in the middle section on page 5. Can you see page 5 there? Or is it cut off on the top? It's in the Shulchan Aruch where we have Reish Chav Ches in Vav. There on the bottom, you see 4 lines up from the bottom? On page 5, the middle section, 4 lines up from the bottom, where it's the word, v'im, v'im hu davar di'iboy le'asuke adayte, if it's something that you should have figured out on your own, she'ena osa b'shvilo, and that he's not really doing it for you, umata atzmo, and you're just deluding yourself, shesover she'osa b'shvilo l'chvodu kagon, what's the example? Shepoga b'chaveru b'derech, v'sover ze she'yotza l'krasso l'chabdo. One man meets his fellow on the road, and he thinks, the first one thinks, oh, he must be coming out to greet me. Ein tzarech lo'odil. You don't have to inform him, says Shulchan Aruch. Why? Because he should have known it on his own. Okay, that's the category we just articulated. Buyer beware, you should have known this. Let's get some examples. Take a look back. Let's go back to page 7. Again in the Shulchan Aruch. Are you with me? Everybody with me on page 7? I'm sorry, we're flipping back and forth. I just wanted to see that inside. Page 7 says the Shulchan Aruch and Tess, we just said you're not allowed to mislead people by dyeing the hair of your Eved so that he looks younger. Says the Shulchan Aruch, wait a second. You're also not allowed, Ein novchin b'kravayim kadei shiyu shmeinu rechavim. You're not allowed to blow up the intestines of an animal so that they look fresh in Machane Yehuda where you're at the meat market. And not only that, says the Shulchan Aruch, Ve'ein shorin habasur b'mayim. You're not allowed to soak meat in water, which makes it thicker, kadei she'yiro lavan v'shamein, that it looks white and fat. By the way, anybody who is knows stuff about the meat industry, if you go to Jewel or to Hungarian and you buy corned beef, there are different kinds of corned beef. There are multiple kinds. There's first cut corned beef, there's second cut corned beef, and then there's like 18th cut corned beef. What's the difference between first cut and 18th cut? If you look careful at the meat, there is like these white lines in it. Oh, sometimes it's fat, but sometimes it's actually not fat. It's actually water, which is congealed in there.
Marbling.
So some of that is actually water, which is allowed by the FDA and other agencies to be, there's a certain percentage of water which is allowed to be put in this cut of meat and sold as such, because that is the level which is acceptable. So wait a second. How is that acceptable? Didn't the Shulchan Aruch just say you're not allowed to put water in the meat? So take a look at the Sma. You see on the right side where I put a little arrow, this is the Sefer Me'iras HaNayim, Rabbi Yeshua Falk, who is also the author of the Prish and the Drish, the commentaries in the Tur. He says the following, V'hainu dafka b'makom she'ein haminag kein. This restriction is only in a place where the custom is not to do that. If the custom of all the butchers is to soak it so that it looks white, what's the din? Mutter. Because you are not misleading him. He should have known. So that's case number one. Now, this is an interesting, it's a somewhat controversial point. This is trying to say that if this is the custom in that place, we are holding you, the buyer, responsible for that awareness, which is the accepted opinion in 8 of the Aruch HaShulchan. This is 100 years ago in Navaruk, Rabbi Yechiel Michel Epstein. He writes down on the bottom, here in Reish Chav Ches, in Sifka, in Sifhei, where I have the arrow, he says, "In minag hakatzovim lishro sabasar b'mayim mutar." Kevet hakol yodim. Everybody knows shederech lasos kein. That is the norm. And therefore, since that's the standard approach, it's permitted. That's the Aruch HaShulchan's psak. However,
wasn't it just the same way saying it's not misleading?
Right. You're not misleading him because he should have known better. That's the idea.
And what if he's from out of town?
Oh, so apparently, we're going to have to answer that question in a few minutes, but apparently, we are not concerned about that. Apparently, we are concerned about the people who are living here. And we'll see why in a few minutes. I'm holding that's the exciting chiddush. I don't know if it's a chiddush, but the articulation, brilliant articulation of Rabbi Levine. We'll get to that in a couple minutes. But look on page 9, by the way, it's not so simple. The Shulchan Aruch HaRav, which is the Shulchan Aruch authored by the Baal HaTanya, the first Lubavitch Rebbe of Shneur Zalman of Liadi, in the turn of the 1800s, he writes, look in the parentheses here, in his comments, he says, Vishomer nafsho yirchak mizeh. In Yotes, he says, if you're really concerned, if you're very scrupulous, you should not rely on this Sma. You should not do this. Even though the Aruch HaShulchan accepts it, the Shulchan Aruch HaRav, the first Lubavitcher Rebbe, did not accept it. So it's an interesting controversy, Lamaisa, whether or not one should or not rely on this first caveat of advertising by saying, look, everybody's doing it. It must be permitted. So this is already, in terms of relating back to your question, about the house painting. Now we see the house painting is mutter. Why? But at least, certainly according to the Sma and the Aruch HaShulchan, since the custom is that before you sell your house, you paint it. So therefore, everybody should know. Just because they see a newly painted house on the market, that doesn't mean that it's a brand new house. It just means that they just painted it. That's all it means. It's bullshit. Okay? That's caveat number one. Number two, page 10... we're a little bit short on time tonight. I want to hold this. This you can look at on your own time. This is a Tshuva of Moshe in a Yoredein Chelak Aleph and Siman Lamed Aleph about soaking meat in blood. I want to hold this for right now. I'd rather first see the Gemara inside. Go to page 11, please. Go to the next page. Well, it looks fresher that way. Or in water. What was it? Washing it? I forget. Anyway. Whatever, I forget exactly what they... let me check exactly. What were they talking about here? Yeah, it's talking about livers that they would rinse off with blood so that it looks nice and red. He talks about the kashrus issues, and then he talks about the question of marketing. Is that false marketing in terms of the freshness of the livers? But the next caveat I want to mention in terms of buyer beware, what do we say is permitted advertising, says Rabbi Yehuda, Lo yechale kachen v'ni kloyos ve'egozim litinokos mepneishu margilon lovon etzlo v'chacham matirim. We'll come back to that in a second. Go two lines down. Next line. Lo yivor es hagrisin. You should not pick out the grisin, are the thick beans. Why? because it makes it look like the grain is fresher or cleaner than it is. And the rabbis say, no problem. You can pick out some of those beans, the thick beans, to make it look fresher or cleaner than it really is. Why? Look on page 12, says the Gemara on the top. Because V'lo yivra sagrisin, man chachamim, what are the chachamim hold? That's Rabbi Acha. Why did Tanya? Rabbi Acha says, he says, he's matir bedavar ha nir'e. He's matir, something which is able to be seen.
Visible.
It's visible, it's perceptible. So for example, if I'm selling you fruit in a fruit store, and I lay out, I have my avocados on this, you know, like they have those things, you know, what do you call them? Like flats of avocados. And it turns out, you know what I have an avocado, and half the avocado is black and the other half is green. It's green with mold. Avocados are usually close to black. They're not usually green on the outside. So what do? I take all the moldy avocados and I turn them sideways so that you only see the fresh side, the black side. So is that permitted or is that false advertising when somebody walks by and sees all these black avocados? What would you say? Well, it's not the minhag ha'olam, it's not the sma, but it's a davar hanireh. When you buy the avocado, you pick up the avocado, you look at it.
Yeah. But if it was packaged.
Oh, exactly, good nafkamina. But when I come to the thing and I can't open it, that's a different story. That's why I think you come back to the McDonald's or the hamburger ad, there's a big difference. Because if you look on the radio, on the television, and they show you a hamburger bun that mamish, it's mouth-watering. It's mamish so geschmack, it looks humongous. And they tell you it's unbelievable, and it's fresh, and it's this, and it's that. And when you go to the store to buy it, they don't show you what the hamburger looks like. You pay for it, they give it in a sealed thing, they send you on your way, and then you open it up. That's not a davar hanireh. That's not a davar hanireh at all. That's packaged. I agree with Dr. Young. So that's something to consider in terms of what are the parameters of this heter of a davar hanireh. This is quoted in Shulchan Aruch. With another similar parameter. You see where I am now in Reish Chof Ches and Yud Zayin. Mutro liver apsolos mitocha gris and women akitneos kadesh yu yafim. Shezeu dover hanira la'ayin. It's very clear. It's obvious that you're manipulating the goods to make them look good. V'yufal halokeach liros ulahavin kamashavim yoser. Bishvil shows him Amapsolis. They look, you can tell how much it's worth more now that you took out the junk so that it's better. He says, Ubilvad, but careful, Shelo Yivor Ha'elyonim V'yaniach Hapsolis B'tachtonim. Exactly. Don't sell me something which is self-contained. You cleaned off the top, giving the impression that it's all clean, and then on the bottom it's really ridden with bugs. That would be an isser. Because it's not a davar hanireh. I can't see to the bottom of this cake. The chocolate cake looks fabulous. On the bottom, it's totally stale. Don't just put a fresh layer of frosting on the top of a stale cake if you're in a bakery, because I can't see when that cake is from. I should put a little sign in and tell you when this cake is baked. And if I don't do that, says Shulchan Aruch, that is misleading. That's the impression that you get from this Shulchan Aruch. There's one more thing I want to take out of that Mishnah from the beginning, which is an important thing in advertising as well. Let's go back to the general question about, you know, advertising. We said about advertising a culture. Let's be honest. The ad from the Budweiser ad with the human pyramid thing with the truck. So the Budweiser ad with the human pyramid, did that tell you anything about Budweiser? No. It just tells you, you know, Budweiser is fun, people like it, and, you know, it's something that's catchy that stays with you. So that ad really has nothing to do with the product. So the Mishnah we just read said, Rabbi Yehuda said, do not give out kloyos ve'egozim, do not give out nuts and candies to kids to bring them into your shop. Because you're not selling candies, you're selling hardware. So that's, according to Rabbi Yehuda, that is unfair business practices, that's unfair advertising, because you're not advertising your product. You're advertising something else. The Chacham say it's mutter. Why do they say it's mutter? What's the logic?
Because you're not
It's an incentive to sell.
Okay, but Rabbi Yehuda says that I'm not marketing my product.
Well, you're getting
free t-shirts.
Exactly. Don't give away free t-shirts, all that kind of stuff. Stachacham, say it's mutter, you know, like the Gemara says.
Because it's not really deceptive about the product itself.
Okay, but it's a little bit under the wire. Okay. Rabbi Yehuda doesn't like it. You know why the Chacham like it? Because they say this. The Gemara explains above Vassar. The Gemara says, you could do it too. Just like he advertises promoting a certain image, you also can advertise promoting a certain image. There's nothing wrong. There's nothing that he's doing which is deceptive. And even though it's distracting, you also can do the same thing. So just like he gives out candies and nuts to his customers and free t-shirts, you can also give out candies and nuts and free t-shirts. Now, parenthetically, and this is one of the things that I learned, I actually had the privilege of studying with Rabbi Levine in his class, and this is not for a discussion right now, that means that certain pricing policies have to be limited. There are going to be certain limitations to this according to the halacha. And one of the things he talks about is selling something below cost.
Loss leader.
Yeah, that's a big issue. There are a lot of questions about particular issues of loss leaders in halacha, because the whole notion of selling something below cost is something which is, runs afoul of this issue of someone else can do it. Because they can't.
Monopolies.
What's that? Monopolies are also problematic.
Where they will undersell their competition until they drive them out of business.
Exactly. So that would be part of this question of unfair business practice, which he speaks about in the book, and he spoke about in the Shiurim with us when I was in YU, in the Smicha program. That's something to be careful about in terms of fair business practice in advertising. If you're advertising something that your competitor can't fairly compete with, so then that's an unfair advertising strategy.
Yeah, but if you're putting a bid on something, if you want a project to do, your accounting project, so you may give a lower bid than what it actually costs, but then the next year you'll raise the price in order to compete.
So that might not be acceptable, because selling something below cost may be an unfair business practice, because it's a situation in which no one else can compete.
But you're doing that in order to get the business.
Right. But that's a question. If that's a fair business practice or not, it could be that's good for not a fair business practice, because that's not even playing field. And the halacha says that you have to have an even playing field for all the people in the field. This is different. The Gemara actually has a discussion between different things which are affected by price decreases versus things which are not. The Gemara says, talking about wheat, in those days there were certain issues about the wheat prices. The Gemara says, if you lower the wheat prices, that's great. Everyone can just well sell wheat as cheap as they want, because it's just going to drive the price down and be good for the consumer. But the Gemara says, well, certain other things, specific items, if you drive the price down, it destroys the whole market. It destroys the market. Let's say watches. If some guy started selling Rolex watches for $100, so then that would destroy the whole Rolex watch industry. Because no, everybody else would be out of business, and Rolex wouldn't be able to make any more watches, because everybody would just come to this one guy. The whole industry would implode. So that's an interesting sidebar. It's not really our topic, but it's related in terms of fair business practices in marketing. It's not really the ads, but it's a... we could talk more about it different time.
But one is a product and the other one is a service.
Well, the wheat is also a product. The wheat is a product. So this is a very... And again, there are a lot of complexities here. I'm just raising our sensitivities to an issue that, until I came to the class, I never even thought about that, in terms of what are fair business practices in the marketplace, which is very interesting. He has another book called Economic Public Policy and Jewish Law, I think it's called, published by Ketav, also somewhat related to this. So that's a small issue on the side, but it relates to this general issue of advertising a culture. And the answer is, yes, that's also permitted. Why is that permitted? Because you can compete just like anybody else can compete. You can make an ad for Doritos with a talking dog, and they can make an ad for Snickers with a talking cat. You know, like, it's the same thing. There's nothing wrong. So the first thing we said is, if it's Derech HaOlam, if that's the way people do it, it's permitted. We got a few minutes left, and we'll finish up in the next 10. If it's Derech HaOlam, that's permitted. If it's a Dover HaNireh, if it's something which is perceptible, it is permitted. If it's something which everybody can do, if it's honest and everyone can do it, even though it's not to the point, it's also permitted. One caveat which is not permitted is, and this is something he talks about specifically, is lying. Even if it's an obvious lie, lying is never permitted. For you to say, if you use this tissue, you will never have a cold again in your life. Now, will anybody actually think that I would never get a cold again in my life, Doc, from using this tissue? That's patently false, right? So I'm not really misleading anyone, but nonetheless, that's still a violation of Midvar Sheker Tirah. That is obviously not allowed, even if it's not going to dupe anyone. But the question that keeps coming up on, over here is, what's the underlying rationale for all of these svaras of Iud Itar Nafshei? What is it all about? So let's go back and look at that Gemara again. Let's go back. Let's go back to page 6, if we can, to the Gemara in Chulin, and I want to see one more side of this coin. See where I have the two numbers and the brackets on page 6?
Yeah.
Take a look at bracket number 1. Says the Gemara, and this is the Gemara that Rabbi Levine uses to make the following argument, and it's a sweeping analysis, which is so geschmack, it's hard to even describe without seeing it. Says the Gemara, Heichi Machar Zinan, what do you do if you're a butcher, a Jewish butcher, a glatt kosher butcher shop, and you know what fell into your hands now? You have some nevela, some non-kosher meat, or some trefa. What's a trefa? Trefa is an animal that died without shechita. It died of a sickness. Of old age, you had an old cow. She lived mamish until 120 cow years, and that's it. Shite, she went to the Olam HaEmes. Goodbye. So now you got to sell this, but you're not a purveyor of non-kosher meat. So people are going to come into your store. Obviously, you can't sell it under the guise of being kosher. So what are you going to say? Hey, Chimachrazinan, how do you advertise this meat? So Amar Rav Yitzchak Bar Yosef, Nafal Bistra Libnei Chela. I have meat for the Roman soldiers. You put up a sign. Meat for the Roman soldiers. Like the old policy in the continental U.S. before the revolution called quartering. They had to, you know, keep certain numbers of regiments, and British soldiers kept people in their houses. You sell the food to the non-Jewish soldiers in the area, the Roman soldiers. That's when you put the sign. I have meat for the Roman soldiers. What does that help you? Why does that help? What is it good?
It advises the Jews that it's not kosher.
Exactly. So the Gemara goes, wait a second. Why don't you say, well, the Gemara queries, Valema, why don't you say, Nafal trefta libnei chela? I have a trefa animal that died. Why do I say bisra, meat? Why don't I say more precise terminology of trefa? So the Gemara says, lo zavni.
They wouldn't buy it.
They don't want to buy it. So the Gemara says, v'hakamati lahu. You are fooling them, you're deceiving them. The Gemara says, no. Inu hu dekamitu nafshayu. They are misleading themselves. So this has taken our argument one step further. Says the Gemara, you're allowed to advertise something which people could potentially misinterpret. But we still consider that buyer beware. That's still legitimate advertising. Why? Why is that legitimate advertising? Because in this case, the minute he puts up the sign and says, this is food for Roman soldiers, that is a dead giveaway that this is not kosher meat.
The Jews would understand it not to be not kosher meat.
Jews would understand it, but not kosher meat. And even non-Jews would understand that the Jewish butcher shop that's putting up a sign that says for Roman soldiers means it's not kosher. They wanted to get kosher meat. They went to a kosher butcher shop. They could have gone to a non-kosher meat. Who makes the decision? Who figures out whether this is a buyer beware situation or it's a seller make sure to disclose situation? So says Rabbi Levine, there's a parallel in American law. And that's the next page in our packet. The next three pages, you can read it on your own. The last section. This is an FTC, the Federal Trade Commission, policy decision in 1983. Quoting an earlier decision, I gave you the first three pages of the letter, even though it's not what I want to look at now. Go to page 16, the last page before the bibliography. They quote a case of Heinz W. Kirshner in 1963. And he explains. Who wants to read this for us, huh? Oh, thank you so much, Mrs. Kurtz.
Okay. The advertiser cannot be charged with liability with respect to every conceivable misconception, however outlandish, to which his representations might be subject among the foolish or feeble-minded. Some people, because of ignorance or incomprehension, may be misled by even a scrupulously honest claim. Perhaps a few misguided souls believe, for example, that all Danish pastry is made in Denmark. Is it therefore an actionable deception to advertise Danish pastry when it is made in this country? Of course not. A representation does not become false and deceptive merely because it will be unreasonably misunderstood by an insignificant and unrepresentative segment of the class of persons to whom the representation is addressed.
Brilliant, thank you. That is the key. Says Rabbi Levine, and that's the argument that he makes in this Sefer, it is called the reasonable man test. That's what they're articulating here from the FTC, and that really underlies everything that we've been saying today from the Shulchan Aruch and the Achronim. What defines whether an ad is misleading or not? It's the reasonable man test. When you say Nafal Bisra Levnei Chela, the reasonable person, the average everyday guy in the street will say, that's trying to tell me something. The guy doesn't have to say this is treif meat. The fact that he's saying there's an issue here, the reasonable man will know to check it out. If I'm selling you a used car that I just painted last week, and I say to you, this is a used car. This is my used car. It's a 1981 Plymouth with 379,000 miles on it. So do you have to tell the guy to check the engine? Do you have to tell him to check the transmission? No. Because you gave full disclosure for the reasonable man. Says the Gemara, you don't have to tell the rabbi who's coming to walk towards you, I didn't come for you. Because the reasonable man, what's the reasonable man supposed to think? He's supposed to think, well, there are two possibilities here. It's equally as plausible that he came to greet me than he's just walking on the road. So says Rabbi Levine, that is going to be the determining factor. Can the reasonable man, when he looks on television at these ads, does the reasonable man, assuming that they're not patently false, does the reasonable man really think that, you know, by using this product, they're going to get such and such a desired result? If the reasonable man thinks that and it's not true, that's false advertising. That's Geneva Stas. That's an Issa D'Oraisa. But if the reasonable man can interpret this in one of two ways, that's our Moshe's discussion about how to treat the livers. If the reasonable man looks at this and says, well, I don't know if it's new or old liver, I should ask. If you go into the bakery and the reasonable man looks at the cakes in the fridge, why should he think that these cakes are from today? Maybe they're from yesterday. There's no reason that he should assume they're from today. Hence, that is, says Rabbi Levine, the defining factor in terms of determining the ads. So all these three questions of what's considered the Derech HaOlam and how the Kona can be able to see it is all because it's underlied. The underlying principle, says Rabbi Levine, is this issue of what's the reasonable man. He quotes a few other Gemaras, a Bavli and a Yerushalmi, to support this principle that it has to do with the reasonable man. So you're right. The one guy who comes from Uzbekistan and he comes to America for the first time and he sees Danish pastry and he says, I've never been to Denmark. I want a pastry from Denmark. We don't consider that because that doesn't fall under the category of the reasonable man test.
But there still can be plenty of gray areas.
Yes, exactly.
And some things would be black and white, but there would still be, you define reasonable. In other words, they can't get it from the bakery. You might say, it could be yesterday. Well, what if it's 3 days in the refrigerator? At what point, would the reasonable man not, or...
Exactly, and that's why every case is going to be different. That's why, the FTC gets these every year. There are complaints all the time about what is reasonable, what's not, and when do you require disclosure. That these are constantly debated, both among rabbis and among secular authorities. Rav Moshe Feinstein's contention that it's permitted to wash the liver with blood so that it looks red, he quotes another Rav who lived at the same time who disagreed with him, who said that's going to be fooling the reasonable man. It's like the driving commercials. You notice when they have those new fancy cars driving them fast on the road. First of all, I'm convinced that those imagers are sped up. They're for sure sped up. The guy's driving like 16 miles an hour and they're just going vroom because they're making it go fast. But on the bottom, what does it say? It says, professional driver, closed road, don't try this at home. Because they understand. The reasonable man might actually think you should take that brand new car, drive it out to the local cliff, and drive 100 miles an hour around the cliff. So they have to tell you, because they understand the reasonable man might that make that mistake. Whereas, in the case of, you know, they had also a commercial for this, this you can find online also, one of the car companies had a commercial of like four puppets driving a car. They don't have to give you a caveat to say, don't let your children's puppets drive your car, because everybody knows. If you didn't notice, I'll let you know a secret. Puppets can't drive. It's just an ad. Because they know, the reasonable people know that those puppets are actually...
But on the other hand, so much, you know, you look at products that you buy that has the most ridiculous disclaimers on them. Right. Don't use this hair dryer while you're standing in the shower.
Yes.
You know, and it makes you wonder who is the reasonable man that they... were obviously told that they had to put this disclaimer in because someone would sue them.
They're doing that for legal purposes.
That's right. That's exactly. What they're doing. But obviously, again, you look at it and you go, that's ridiculous. Don't stand on this ladder in a thunderstorm reaching up, you know, with metal poles.
Let's close this point with that just one point, is that the answer is yes, which is why the reason they do that is to protect themselves against, you know, rogue judges who are issuing huge contracts like these cases of the people who spill the coffee, you know, like those kind of cases, because those are in fact not in consonance. Exactly, those would probably be not in consonance with this. And by the way, it's interesting, he quotes other cases. He is tremendous Bikias here in American public policy. He quotes several cases where, in fact, the court did follow another model, what he calls the ignorant man standard. He says, Clairol at a certain point was forbidden to say that its dye would color hair permanently. Because people... What's that? Right, and people who are ignorant would think that it actually colors your hair permanently. They didn't realize that hair grows, and then the colored hair grows out, and then it's got another hair coming.
Years ago, it was common for
sure.
So, but you're right. There were cases there is legal precedent in some instances where they didn't follow the reasonable man test, or their conception of reasonable may have been different than what we would be. But you're right. That's exactly why it's so complex in terms of actually applying these issues halacha lemaisa. It's a very gray area. But the point is, what should be guiding our principles are, yes, on the one hand, we got to be asisa v'yoshev hatov, that was last week, and lo signov, and keeping, you know, full disclosure as much as possible without damaging ourselves, and only promoting an image which is the reasonable man could take in different ways and is not going to be misunderstood. Yeah.
I was going to say, what is it, 20 years ago, 30 years ago, in the cigarette advertisements, they used to advertise 3 out of 4 doctors said that this is safe stuff.
Right.
They were trying to set a standard right there, a reasonable standard.
That's the same thing, by the way, when they tell you about different medication that they're advertising. It's very important that they give you all kinds of disclaimers, because the reasonable man might think, oh, that's good for me. They always say, consult your doctor. Well, one might say, well, why do I need to consult my doctor? They said it for me on the ad, because on the ad they have to tell you. The reasonable man might have thought otherwise. For further reading, it's really fascinating. I look forward to seeing Mirtz Hashem next week.